Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Not too bad, Scott. UC's 1-0, 26-14 win over Austin Peay last Thursday night. What are your thoughts on the game, Scott?
I think the biggest thing that jumps off the page is how much the offense was pretty much exactly like last year, in a sense. They didn't really look very dynamic. Outside of Mike Boone breaking a long run late in the game to like ice it, the run game was like pretty pedestrian. And I just wasn't a big fan of the offense in general. It's like the defense like did their part by forcing a couple of turnovers, giving UC some shorter fields. And that really seemed to turn the game. But yeah, it was not the very best start for Luke Fickell and the new coaching staff, I don't think.
Yeah, it was disappointing. Not necessarily unexpected. I mean, game one in year one of a rebuild. I mean, coming into that game, I think all of us had pretty solid expectations, or I guess hopes, of a blowout. 63-7, 56-7, something like that. And it didn't happen. It was a really slow start. They didn't score in the first quarter. They didn't do much scoring at all the entire game. It was close, kind of like many of the games against FCS schools under Tuberville the last couple of years. The difference, though, is that this isn't year four under the same coaching staff. This is year one with a brand new offensive coordinator, brand new staff all around. I feel like I have to give a little bit of leeway for what happened offensively on Saturday or Thursday.
I'm with you on leeway, but it's like not like Austin Peay was like James Madison or anything. It's like a team that didn't win a game last year. It's like one of the youngest rosters. And like they pretty much dictated the game to UC. Like they ran the ball the entire game. Which I know like hurts the offense some because like they were on the field for like 15 drives, but just the overall efficiency was lacking, and like you miss an extra point, which is always disappointing. And like the fact that with like 10 minutes to go, it was 20-14, and we were looking at almost the same situation as last year, where UC is struggling to put away the FCS team in the first game at home. It's like, I know everybody wanted to see UC come out and just like blast them from the start. It's like, in that sense, it was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, I think a lot of we're coming into the season, we knew the struggles were going to be at the offensive line position. I mean, they just were not good on Thursday. Hayden Moore was going to be questionable. He still looked questionable. I mean, he didn't throw any interceptions. He managed the game fine. He had a touchdown pass that was dropped. But, he still missed some open receivers. I don't know if they really even attempted a pass more than 30, 40 yards downfield. I don't know if that's just Den Brock's offense. He's going with the West Coast style of short, 15 to 20-yard passes and dinking and dunking it down there. My biggest questions are, why didn't they go to Mike Boone early? I mean, he's the best player on the team. Was it because they knew that the offensive line wasn't going to be able to give him the holes that they were expecting? And we kind of saw that when he was out there and getting the rock. I mean, the offensive line wasn't getting that much of a push against, like, to your point, a very young Austin Peay team that isn't very good. I mean, they were 0-12 last year. I don't know. I don't know what to make of the offensive struggles. I mean, it's hard to really make any huge overarching conclusions after one game against an FCS team, but I don't know. I don't know if it's just the lack of talent on the offensive line, the play calling. It wasn't encouraging. Hopefully that picks up not this week, but in the coming weeks.
But to your point about the passing game, like Hayden Moore threw 28 times for 151 yards. Like, he didn't turn it over at all. But there was, like, one pass down the field, really. Like, they had one pass play over 20 yards.
Right.
Like Geddes and Khalil Lewis did have like solid games. They both got touchdowns, but like there wasn't really like anything great from the passing game to take away from this. Which I know was another thing everybody was looking at, like the quarterback situation. Like people debated it all spring and summer, who should start. And like after like one game, you can't be like, oh, Hayden Moore's terrible, but like he was all right. And like that's just kind of what Hayden Moore's been outside of like the Tulsa game last year, like the Memphis game 2 years ago. He's just been like kind of all right.
Yeah, and overall, they did fine. Like to your point, the defense was solid. They're gonna have a hell of a time against Navy if they can't figure out how to bottle up a quarterback on third down. It's gonna be a bit of a struggle here the first season. We kind of knew that when we did our season preview. Both of us, I think, had them at like 6-6, 7-5 with some. I don't think either of us really thought they were going to blow out anybody except for Austin Peay. Maybe this is just what we're going to look at this season. Defensively, I think they did okay. I mean, other than those three or four times on third down where they just let the quarterback run for 10 or 15 yards. I mean, I like the aggression on defense. It seems like they had a fire blitz package every series. They seem to be getting after the quarterback quite a bit. It's just that they were rushing one side and he would escape out of the pocket to the other side for 10 or 15 yard gain. I mean, I assume Fickell will hopefully clean that up. It's just the offense is going to be such a pain in the ass to deal with this year. It's just going to give so many headaches. And I don't think there's a way for Den Brock and his coaching staff to really fix anything. It's going to be a struggle.
So much of it is like the talent, like you mentioned on the offensive line. And I think that's a pretty big issue. It was an issue last year and it seems like an issue this year. Cause if they can't run the ball, like Mike Boone didn't end up with 100 yards. But as we mentioned, like a lot of that came on a big run late. Like if they can't run the ball against these teams, like they couldn't run the ball last season, that puts your quarterback in a bad spot. And like when teams can just like tee you up and like know what you're gonna do, that really stifles your offense. Like I thought the defense played like pretty well overall. Like, you don't like to see a team like Austin Peay run for like 200 yards on you, but it's not like they did anything in the passing game to make you like worry about that being a threat. But still, like 240, getting outgained by Austin Peay, like your opener is pretty terrible.
Yeah, exactly, I don't think any of us is going to expect much of the offense this year, but it's going to be, for me, it's just the game management and we got to look forward to 2018 now at this point. I mean, this is going to be a bit of a rough season. There's going to be growing pains. We saw some good things from Austin Peay, or from the Austin Peay game. The defense looks solid. The front seven is going to be aggressive. There's talent in the secondary. The offensive line needs a full rebuild. The quarterback situation is still iffy. Mike Boone, when he is getting fed the rock, looks pretty good. The receivers, they've got some good stars in Geddes and Lewis. Gray's also out there, and it looks like they're actually going to use the tight end this year. So there's building blocks. It's just going to be a bit of a struggle sometimes down the road.
Yeah, and I'm kind of not sold on the defense being like great. I think it's going to be – hopefully it'll be a step up from last year. But if it – like, and they can keep you seeing some of the games that they couldn't keep them in last year just because of all the pressure that they ended up taking. Like, that's my biggest concern is, like, they break, but kind of like how they would break some late in the games last year.
Yeah, and one of the aspects of Fickell's news conference this week was a little concerning was he was noticing a lot of cramping at the end of the game. You know, players getting their 60th, 70th, 80th rep, they were starting to cramp at the end of the game, which I don't know if that's more of just the natural tendencies of players playing their first game of the season. I mean, they're just not used to those that kind of workload. I don't know if that's just the depth that UC has at various positions, or lack thereof at various positions, and that'll eventually work itself out over time as, you know, Fickell brings in his players and his recruits. But I was kind of hoping for, I mean, the team was definitely trying down the stretch. It wasn't like a lack of throwing in the white flag we saw during the Tupperville era so many times. But I was kind of hoping the improved strength and conditioning program would have seen some of the fruits of that labor over that we saw over the winter and over the summer. I mean, how many videos do they have of, you know, of the team getting out there in February in the middle of the snow and like running laps in the doing up downs like over on the practice field? I thought we would have seen more. I don't know, more of, or I guess less of the tired and the cramping and stuff like that at the end of the game. But I don't know, that's just what happens every first game. I mean, every team just goes through that. I don't know.
Yeah, like that'd be the hope, that it's just a first game thing. Because it's not like it was like 95 degrees out there. Like by the end of the game, it was like in the mid-70s.
Right.
That's a... And especially with like the caliber of opponents that they have coming up next, they definitely need to be on their game for sure. Let's shout out a couple of the defensive players who had like big stat lines. Malik Clemens got credit for 18 tackles, 16 of those assists. Perry Young had 17 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, and forced a fumble. Jalen Miner had 10 tackles.
Perry Young looked awesome. Can we stop at Perry Young for a second? Like nickelback position, having 3 tackles for loss and a forced fumble, that is exactly what you want out of the nickelback.
He looked really great. I think that's a good sign. Like, especially since like depth is a big question mark for your secondary outside of your starters. It's good to see somebody new step in and play so well.
Yeah, exactly, and that's like one position where you can say, okay, I mean, what Perry Young, he's like, what, a true freshman or a redshirt freshman or something? I mean, you've got him locked in. I mean, he might not play nickelback for the next, he's a sophomore, a true sophomore. He's not going to play nickelback his entire career, but I mean, at least you can say, okay, there's a young guy who's going to only get better and better and better in the secondary over the next few years. And that's a guy you can rely on to be good for the next few years. There's no question marks with him.
Yeah, like you would think, like the experience he saw last year. Like, I know he didn't play a ton, but he played enough. I think he played in every game at some point. Like, you hope this is like him blossoming. Like, it's kind of like we've seen some of the other guys blossom up the last few years, like playing that type of similar role.
Right.
Jalen Miner had 10 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss. The standout linebacker. And a lot of the other guys had nice games. Tyrell Gilbert had a sack, which was UC's only sack of the game.
Ryan Wright with a fat guy pick.
Yeah, almost skipped over that one.
Yeah, how do you miss that? That was incredible. What a way to end the half.
Before we wrap this up, was there anything in the special teams you thought stood out at all?
The Andrew Gantz shakiness at best. That was mildly cause for a heart attack. Like, I don't know how else to put that.
Yeah, because like his earlier runs, last couple of years, it seemed like he regularly would miss an extra point, and he never missed a chip shot field goal, and he missed both, which I think is kind of worrisome. But if he's going to miss and have bad games, at least it's a game against Austin Peay and not next week if that game is somehow close.
Yeah, I mean, is that first game yips, or is that a problem for things, or is that a sign of bad things to come?
I'm hoping it's just yips. I hope badly it's just yips.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess we'll find out here against Michigan this week, and then you know, the next couple of road games coming up. Punting wise, really liking Ozzie. He's a guy who I think UC can build around. I mean, he's what, the oldest guy on the team? Isn't he like, he's like 20, he's like 23 or something. He's a 23-year-old freshman. But I mean, if they can lock him in at punter, I mean, if he's going to keep booting 64-yard punts, yeah, hell yeah, bring him in and keep him in there. I mean, yeah, I'll have another like Pat O'Donnell or Kevin Huber on our hands.
Get the three punts inside the 20. No touchbacks. It's pretty nice. Pretty nice way to do things in the opener. And kickoffs seem to be pretty good, except for the one kick out of bounds.
Right. Yeah, that is actually one thing. I was kind of surprised, like, they split Gantz and Jones on kickoffs and field goals extra points. I mean, Gantz seemed to have the longer leg, I guess. But he was kind of sidelined by his injuries last year, so they kind of had to go to Ryan Jones. And it looks like this staff is kind of still keeping that dynamic despite both players being healthy. You know, Jones taking the kickoffs and Gantz doing field goals and extra points. I'm curious if that's going to continue throughout the season.
That is kind of interesting, because even when Tony Miliano was on the team, Gantz handled all the kicks and Miliano kicked off. I wonder if there's something with like his kickoffs they just like don't like.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, Jones did fine on the kickoffs. I mean, he had one that, you know, went out of bounds for that penalty. But, I mean, overall, it was fine. Yeah, I mean, nothing to complain about.
It's just interesting because, like, it seems like most kickers, if, like, you have a top-quality kicker like Gantz has shown in the past, they normally handle both things. So I wonder what that's all about.
Right, and I feel like, I mean, from the special teams unit, we just, like, the expectation is no fuck-ups. Like, Gantz had fuck-ups in the extra point and the field goal, but the punting was solid. They got three inside the 20, to your point. The kickoffs, there was one out of bounds, which was a fuck-up, but for the most part, it was okay. As long as we're not talking about special teams too much every week, special teams is doing its job. And that was not the case for a lot of the time under the Tuberville era. So we'll see.
And Devin Gray averaged over 10 yards a punt return, which was nice to see.
Right. Like, the special teams unit is just doing okay. Don't have any massive screw-ups. Get a couple of good punt and kickoff returns. Maybe take one to the house. And let's just spend most of our time talking about the offense and defense. And we'll be fine.
Was there anything else you wanted to hit on about this game, or do you want to move on to Michigan?
I would really like to delay talking about the slaughter that's going to be happening in a couple of days as long as possible, so can we talk about some of the true freshmen?
Sure, go ahead.
Sure, okay. Good, thank you. Thank you for indulging me. Michael Warren didn't really have that many carries, but he looks like a load. Like, Mike Boone looks large. Like, Mike Boone, his upper body is like another half person of full muscle. Like, his biceps and shoulders are like the size of my thighs. Like, he's massive. And he can bring in, like, a Michael Warren, who's a little bit shorter, but more of a bowling ball type running back. And even he looks like he's going to grow into, like, a Mike Boone type guy in the next couple of years. Like, he just has that frame that just looks like he can add another 10 pounds or 20 pounds of muscle.
Definitely. And it seems like they took it kind of slow with him in the opener. He only had a couple of carries.
Yeah.
And I know he returned one of the kickoffs. I'm interested to see what he's going to do more. I was kind of hoping he'd get a little bit more of a showcase. But they didn't really run the ball a ton, at least with official carries. Like, official carries-wise, they only had, what, 24 carries, and 19 of them went to Mike Boone.
Right.
But I guess that's kind of what you want, with Boone taking a majority of the carries. But kind of interested to see what Warren looks like, So, I mean, he looks like he can play. And all we've heard all summer was that he can step in and be the man.
Yeah, which is great to hear. And, I mean, you obviously know that Boone's going to get, you know, 80-90% of the reps. It was interesting seeing that Warren was the first one in off the bench at running back. And it wasn't Jared Doakes who was the redshirt freshman. Like, I thought Doakes would have come in first ahead of Warren. But it was interesting that they went to the true freshman right off the bat. I mean, I think that's kind of an interesting dynamic that we should probably keep an eye on throughout the season. And obviously, like, in a 26-14 win, you're not going to see many true freshmen in a more of a blowout. They probably would have gotten more run. Like, I was kind of hoping to see a little bit of Jake Stopko, what is pretty much now the backup quarterback while Ross Trail is out. And a little bit more of, like, I don't know, like Jarrell White. I mean, he was in the game, but he only had a tackle. Tyquan Statham had a nice game. I mean, from a true freshman, I mean, he had two tackles. He looked pretty active from the linebacker position. I don't know. I mean, I was kind of hoping to see more of the true freshmen, but from what we saw, I mean, they looked okay. Maybe against East Carolina or UConn, we'll see more of them, but we'll see. They looked okay.
Yeah, like, to your point, like we saw some of the guys get some action. But it wasn't like the showcase you really expected. Like, you kind of wanted to get a different look at some of these guys, like, in a real game environment. And just the circumstances.
Right.
Like, you can't be like, oh, we're going to run out of the freshmen now when it's 20-14. Like, you can't really afford to do that in a close game. But, like, maybe...
Yeah, and
but it sounds like we'll see some of that if the Michigan game goes the way most people think it's going to go. So we should see some of the new blood in that game, you would think.
You would hope. And, I mean, I don't know what the depth chart looks like, but I was kind of surprised to really only see Geddes, Lewis, Rollins, Gray out there at receiver. Like, they didn't really rotate in any of the younger players like, I don't know, Malik Muj or Marcel Paul at the receiver position. Braxton Neal didn't see any playing time. Thomas Geddes didn't, Geddes was in there, sorry. But I was sort of hoping to see, like, Summers or Muj or Paul, you know, some of the younger receivers coming in there just to kind of see what they could do. But again, I mean, it wasn't a blowout, so you kind of have to play the guys you can rely on a week-to-week basis just to get the win. I'm curious if we start seeing some of those younger receivers get a few reps down the road, because they're the future. We got to see them at some point, especially defensively as well. I mean, they're so young all over the place that it's like you're kind of seeing the future right now, like with Perry Young. But I mean, we'll see. I mean, from the young guy perspective, I mean, I guess we're not going to really see many of these guys until like later in the season and next year. But yeah. But yeah, it was an okay game from the youngsters from what we saw.
Yeah, cause like, especially since they didn't get a chance to get significant playing time like late in the game. Like, I think most of the young guys looked all right. Nobody was really terrible, and like nobody really stood out as like amazing outside of
right.
Perry Young.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one area, I don't know who had the blown coverage in the secondary, but, the second touchdown pass that Appalachian State had, the first touchdown pass, that was a complete blown coverage with nobody around the Appalachian State receiver. I don't know who blew that, if that was like a Coleman blown coverage, or if that was a safety, or if that was Perry Young, but that's a cause for concern. I don't know if that's due to the young guys or if that's veteran leadership. I don't know who blew that call. I don't remember.
I don't either. But that's something I'm willing to chalk up to the first game, like miscommunications. Like, that's the type of stuff that you hope that they stamp out during film sessions. And we don't see that type of, like, insanely blown coverage like anymore. obviously things happen, and they're going to blow more coverages just because that's what happens. But like stuff like that where the guy's like wide open, you really, like it should never happen in general.
Are we basically chalking up most of the, I don't know, head-scratching moments on Thursday to like first game jitters? Or are some of those things like the offensive line not really creating many holes? Hayden Moore not really, he managed the game, but didn't really hit many receivers downfield. Are we chalking up most of that to like first game jitters and the new coaching staff, or is this something that we should be kind of concerned about down the road and all that stuff will get worked out?
Kind of willing to chalk up like some of the passing game to like first game kind of being generic, but yeah. Then like you can't like really commit to that because it was a close game until like the end, so you can't be like, oh, they were just being generic and trying not to show Michigan anything, but they had to really try to win this game, like if the game was in doubt. So like I think some of it's just an adjustment from the, you know, the Eddie Grant period where they would throw downfield a ton, and now the offense seems to be something where it's a lot of underneath passes and they don't really try to like break you open over the top as much anymore. And I think some of that is because of the line. The line is my biggest worry. It's like if they don't look great against Austin Peay, like there's really not much to make you think like, oh, they're going to stand out against Michigan and Navy and South Florida and some of these other teams that have, you know, solid defensive lines.
And that is the concern, because the offensive line is like, that's not something that you fix overnight. Like that's something you just kind of live with for one season and hopefully bring in a couple of more recruits throughout in the off season and maybe plug them in. And it's not like at receiver where you can just go out and say, Hey recruit, we are terrible at receiver. You're a four-star recruit. You'll play as a true freshman. And that stuff, I mean, you can fix the receiver position by bringing in two or three good recruits and plug them in and basically turn around the position in a season. The offensive line, I mean, if there's problems this year, it's going to take like another season or two to really get that thing worked out. So they're just going to have to game plan around it. And maybe that's why we saw more passing in the beginning of the game and not a lot of running, because the staff just knew that the offensive line was not going to create gaping holes for Boone, which they didn't really once they did give him the rock. So I don't know. It could be a concern through East Carolina and UConn at the end of the season and into 2018. We'll see.
To your point about the offensive line, like, that's one of those things, like, guys just have to go out there and get experience and, like, get reps. You can't just plug and play an offensive lineman. There's too much, intricacies of, like, the protection and, like, your run scheme. And, like, for them to not just, like, come out and, like, completely, like, blow Austin Peay off the ball. Like, they did, like, what? Like, they didn't give up a sack, but, I don't know, like, 4.3 yards a play is just nothing amazing. And just,
right,
like,
they didn't...
what we saw last year, it didn't seem like the line was, like, a standout improvement.
Right, and I mean, again, didn't give up a sack against an FCS defensive line, which, I mean, I don't know how solid Austin Peay's defensive line is, but that was probably one of the easiest front sevens they were going up against all year. Maybe throw in East Carolina's front seven at some point. I don't know. I mean, from a raw talent standpoint, Austin Peay has to be the easiest unit that they faced, and they were only okay. They were fine. That's not going to be the case this Saturday. not in the slightest. And again, that we're going from one extreme to another, but on average, if you were only okay against Austin Peay, it raises cause for concern against, like, even a Marshall or a Tulane or a UConn. It just makes you a little concerned about how they're going to hold up throughout the year against not great talent on the front seven, but average talent, I guess. We'll see, though.
I think that's a fair point. It's like you don't have like a ton of blowaway defensive lines coming at you in this league, but it's like you can't hold off the weakest one. And like this has to be the weakest one. Like I don't know who else you would vote besides like you said, like East Carolina or like maybe Miami. But yeah, it's not a great sign that the line wasn't great. And I guess we can finally bite the bullet and move on to Michigan.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's make the jump.
Cincinnati, a pretty significant underdog, as one might expect. The Bearcats, let's see, right now it's 34.5, which has to be like the biggest spread against Cincinnati in like years and years. I can't remember the last time they were such a gigantic underdog.
Yeah, I mean, what was even the spread against Ohio State a couple of years ago? It wasn't 5 touchdowns. I know that.
I think it was in the 20s somewhere. I'm going to try to look it up real quick. Yeah, like 5 touchdowns is kind of insane. That's what you would expect for like Cincinnati against like Miami University, not like somebody against Cincinnati.
Right. I mean, while you look it up, I mean, their ESPN has Michigan as with a 97.1% chance of winning. The line started at 31.5 earlier this week, and money is clearly just being thrown at Michigan over the course of the week to bump it up to 34.5. It really shows what work that Fickell and his staff have ahead of them to rebuild this program. And it's going to get ugly. It's going to be a bit ugly on Saturday.
The Ohio State opened as 12.5 point favorites, but the line went up just like 16-17 by kickoff. So yeah,
not even 20. That's how far this is. I mean, if we're going to compare a national championship Ohio State team to a very solid Michigan program that could very well finish as a playoff contender, this program has fallen quite a bit.
Like even back, I looked up the Tennessee line real quick. That was even like 6. So yeah, like that was what 2011, 2012 when they played Tennessee. And they were coming off a similar, yeah, like 4-8 season. So like, that's not really a great sign.
Yeah, this program slid a bit. It slid a bit. And unfortunately, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we previewed the season. I mean, you're following up your easiest game against your hardest game. I mean, Michigan's coming off what looks like a relatively close game against Florida, 33-17 win. I mean, it was only a couple of possessions difference. But, I mean, Michigan held Florida's offense to a field goal. I mean, 2 of Florida's touchdowns, their only touchdowns of the game, were pick sixes off of Wilton Spike. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. The defense that lost, they basically had, 10 of 11 starters replaced in the offseason, only allowed 3 points from a Florida Gators offense. Part of that could be the fact that Florida didn't have that great of an offense, but I mean, you're still talking about a ranked P5 team. And Jim Harbaugh's defense just basically worked them up and down the field most of the game. And the offense itself scored, I think the offense only scored 26 points, but I mean, that's still 26 points against a pretty solid Florida defense. So yeah, it's gonna be rough. The 5 touchdown underdog line is probably pretty accurate, unfortunately. Hopefully UC keeps it respectable. Otherwise, it's gonna be one where you turn off at halftime.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts, Scott? Because I feel like I'm taking this down the rabbit hole, and I want you to turn this around. Or keep dragging us down. It's up to you.
Well, it's kind of hard to take it out of the rabbit hole, just because Like, if Michigan, like, ran the ball like crazy on Florida's defense. I know Florida had players suspended, but it seemed like it was most of their offensive players were suspended. Like, at least, like, their offensive stars, like, Callaway was suspended. Like, Isaac ran the ball like crazy. Like, he had 114 yards. Like, their other running back had, like, 75 yards. So you know that's what they're going to do. They're just going to start pounding the run game. And, like, Wilton Spade did, like,
Right.
looked kind of like garbage. Like, threw, like, two pick sixes, like you said. But that was, like, the only points that Michigan gave up. So that, like, also makes you have to worry that the Bearcats aren't going to do very well in that aspect of the game. It's like, this is the offense that we saw go, what, like, three games last year without scoring a touchdown. And it seems like that's definitely in play again against Michigan.
Yeah, and that's the biggest concern is that it's by and large the same offense with the same quarterback, the same running back, the same receivers, less offensive linemen, less maybe different offensive linemen, I would say, with a brand new offensive coaching staff. And they struggled to score points against Austin Peay. And the offensive line, like we talked about, was okay against Austin Peay, is now going up against a defense that allowed 3 points against Florida. Three. And scored a touchdown themselves. They allowed a total of, oh my God. They allowed 192 total yards of offense against Florida. Yeah, it's, oh God. It's gonna be rough. Like, is there an area, like if you're lining up Michigan's position group against UC's position group on the opposite side of the line. Is there a position group where UC has an advantage?
No.
Yeah, I know there's a long pause.
I it's like really hard to say because I don't really think that they do at this point in time. Like maybe they have, I don't know, maybe like they have like a push at quarterback and if like Spate like is terrible. But like even
Well,
then,
like,
like
okay, so I let me ask a question. Let me ask a question differently. So not quarterback versus quarterback, but like their offensive line versus our defensive line and linebackers, or their receivers versus our defensive backs, and vice versa. Like, is there that, head-to-head position group where UC has an advantage?
I really don't know. I don't think they have a great chance against Michigan's offensive line. Like they only got like one sack. They got a couple hurries against Austin Peay. Like I know Florida put down Spade a couple times. So do you hope like the Bearcats can pull something like that off? Like forcing him into turnovers is really like their only hope. It's like the secondary has to outplay the receivers. Like maybe they can do that, but at the same time, it seems like it's a really tough task.
One of the positive aspects about this game compared to Austin Peay is that the biggest challenge UC had against Austin Peay stopping them was they had a mobile quarterback who, if it was third and 8, third and 10, he would just roll out of the pocket away from the pressure and run his ass for the first down. Wilton Spate at 6'6", 230, who's a tower, he's not going to be doing that. John O'Korn, his backup, is not going to be doing that. Florida had, like, to your point, they found success bottling him up in the pocket and getting sacks. I mean, granted, that's a talented Florida front seven, but the challenge here is if UC's defensive front seven isn't getting pressure and Wilton Spate has all day to throw, he's probably going to find an open receiver at some point down the road. And that doesn't even consider the fact that they have a running game of Ty Isaac and Chris Evans who can probably reel off yardage at a good clip. So if Michigan gets the running game going and the front seven gets worn down, it could start to get ugly. And that's where I fear that UC's offense having to play catch up against Michigan's defense is just going to be interception city every single series.
I think your point is spot on. Like, we're kind of looking at the same thing we've seen with some of the other big, like, non-conference road games UC's played. Like, against Ohio State, the Buckeyes just ran the ball like crazy. Like, Tennessee ran the ball like crazy, to go back even further. It's like the big disparity between, like, the players UC can recruit and the players that, like, Big Ten and, like, SEC schools recruit is the line. And, like, those bigger, powerful lines just seem to, like, knock UC's guys back off the ball. And that has to be the number one concern. It's like Michigan's just going to come out and run the ball down your throat. And then that's going to set up the passing game. And Spate probably won't complete like 40% of his passes again. So like you're kind of looking at a situation where like the potential for Michigan putting up big points on you is out there. And like I think they're kind of at a disadvantage in the special teams department too.
Yeah, they're just a disadvantage like in a lot of areas, and this is the challenge. This is the problem with Tommy Tuberville not focusing on Midwest recruiting and thinking he can pull diamonds in the rough out of like the Florida and Georgia and Alabama. I mean, the Midwest is known for offensive linemen. Like you look at like some of the offensive linemen that played on Saturday. Will Campbell, I think he was a walk-on out of St. X. I mean, that says a lot about who he is as a player. They can earn a starting spot on UC, but he didn't have that many scholarship offers coming out of high school, and he walked on to UC and ended up starting, but he was still a walk-on at one point. I mean, Evan Mallory, who was one of the top-rated recruits out of, I think, the 2015 or 2016 class at offensive guard out of IMG Academy, isn't even on the team anymore. Like, Tommy Tuberville did not recruit offensive linemen well when he was here, and this is what we're seeing now. Like, the offensive line is not very good because they just don't have the warm bodies to fill in. And that's the problem, is when you go up against a team like a Michigan that basically churns out offensive linemen and basically go into any room in the Midwest and get a big 6'5", 290-pound offensive guard who's a four or five-star recruit and get him to play, and you're basically filling your roster with those types of players. I mean, that's what UC's up against on Saturday. I mean, that's the front seven is gonna have to step up in a big way against an offensive line full of those types of big Midwestern players, whereas UC's throwing in a few X walk-ons, and you know Corey Cunningham is a hell of a tackle, but we just don't have enough guys like him against a Michigan defense that again is full of four and five star players that allowed 3 offensive points against Florida. That's the scary part about Saturday. Like I feel like if we're talking about frame by frame, UC is going to keep it close early. They're going to be. I don't think UC is going to get blown out at halftime. I don't think it's going to be like a 25-35 nothing, something around there. I think it'll be like a couple of touchdowns at halftime. I think the front seven has enough going for them to get to Wilton Speak a couple of times. I think they can bottle up the running game a decent amount. I think the secondary is good enough to keep up with the receivers for a half. It's after halftime that bothers me. It's just the depth and talent of Michigan is just going to come out.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I see it going as well. Like, I think UC can definitely play with them for a half, then maybe even 3 quarters. But just like from what we've seen, from what we saw from the offense against the worst team you're going to play, and what we saw from the offense consistently last season, like you can't bank on them to be like a high scoring machine. Like they're going to have to keep Michigan at bay. And they're not going to have to put the defense in terrible positions where they're facing short fields, where they're on the field forever if UC goes 3 and out. The offense is going to have to start some solid drives and really get some things moving. And I think that's the biggest problem, because like, do you see like any big plays happening? Like, I know Florida like didn't break any. Like, they have their own issues, Florida, but You'd still probably take
Florida's that. Florida, though. I mean, they still have that SEC speed, no matter how much of it is more of a joke than anything, a lot of those teams, but go on.
Yeah, you'd still probably take Florida's offensive line over UC's, and you probably take Florida's running backs and receivers. And like we just talked about, like, their offense didn't do anything against Michigan, and, like, faced an uphill climb the whole entire game. And, like, once you fall behind, like, they're just going to run the ball, like, right down your throat. So, yeah, that's, like, my biggest concern. It's like, UC has got a chance if they can force a couple turnovers. Kind of Spade didn't throw a ton of interceptions last year. But he's coming off a really terrible game. So I don't think you can bank on him, like, bouncing all the way back. But I don't think you can bank on him being that terrible. It's like, if he throws you one or two, like, you have to take advantage and, like, turn them into points. Or turn them into turnovers, but then turn those turnovers into points. Like, you just can't leave any points on the field if you're going to beat Michigan. And just, like, unfortunately, I think that the offense is just not good enough to keep Michigan at bay for long. And it's going to turn into a blowout late.
Right. I mean, the question is, I mean, if you're putting the game on Hayden Moore's shoulders, do you trust him to manage the game against Michigan? Maybe. I.e., you know, moving the ball at a decent clip, keeping time of possession in UC's favor, not throwing in any interceptions. Sure, I think he could probably manage the game against Michigan. Do you trust him if UC is falling behind defensively, if Michigan's scoring touchdowns and field goals, if UC's down a couple of touchdowns or three or four touchdowns, do you trust Hayden Moore to really put the game on his back and light up the scoreboard and find receivers 50 or 60 yards downfield for touchdowns? No, absolutely not. Like, that's the problem. That's the scary part.
Oh, definitely. Because, like, just like from what we've seen him in the past, like, once teams just start pinning their ears back and bring the pressure, he's, like, not the same player. Like, he has time to pick your defense apart. Like, in his, like, two standout showcase games, like, against Tulsa and against Memphis. Like, he can make big plays. But, like, if you bring the pressure, it seems like he's not very good at making things happen. Like, not to say, like, a ton of quarterbacks are, but it's really hard. It's something he really struggles with. And, like, in Michigan, like, it's going to do the same thing Austin Peay did, and, like, they're going to hold the ball forever. And, like, they give up 9 first downs against Florida. And, like, when you're offensively had 15 first downs against Austin Peay, that's a major cause for concern.
Like, I almost, like, if you go back and look at, like, the Houston game last year, and albeit, I mean, that was at home, I mean, at Nippert, where, I mean, Nippert, you basically give yourself, like, a touchdown or two a lot of the time, just from the environment of Nippert Stadium. I mean, the big house on the road is going to be way different, but, I mean, UC kept that game close. Hayden Moore didn't make many mistakes. He had a couple of good passes. He had an excellent pass to Devin Gray for a touchdown. But after halftime, granted, it didn't seem like this staff, the previous staff, made many adjustments, if any, after halftime. The bottom just dropped out. And that's kind of my concern with this game. I mean, Hayden Moore's floating along, keeping it manageable. The defense is forcing a couple of punts. They maybe allowed a touchdown or two, maybe a couple of field goals. But then Jim Harbaugh makes adjustments defensively, and Hayden Moore can't keep up, and he throws a couple of picks, and then it's just a blowout from that point on, and UC just can't keep up, and that's my concern. And it's not like something we didn't really expect. Like, I don't know anyone in their right mind doesn't believe that a 34-point line isn't reasonable. Like, I think UC can probably beat that line, or whatever you call it, where they lose by less than 34 points, but I mean, a 34-point line is appropriate.
Yeah, I don't think too many people are going to dispute it. Especially with like a team coming off a 4-8 season and a team that almost made the playoff last year, that just demolished another like top 20 team.
Right. Right. So I don't know. It's, I mean, at the end of the day, Scott, what do you have this score being? I'll say at halftime and then end of the game.
The halftime, I'll go halftime score of like 20-0. And I kind of think they're going to get run out. So I'm going to say like 45-7.
Yeah, I'd say halftime, I'll say halftime like 24-6. I think that the defense will do enough to keep it relatively close at halftime, and the offense will be able to move the ball enough to get into field goal range, if not touchdown range. So 24-6, and then something like 42-16, something like that. They maybe get a touchdown. They don't let Michigan beat the spread, but they I don't know. In the box score doesn't look great.
I think UC can score them in garbage time. I'm just not terribly confident with the offense we just saw to sustain drives, like not turn the ball over and like give the defense a chance. I think the defense is going to do its part, but there's only so much you can do before you just start getting overwhelmed. Like if Florida's defense, like which everybody like regards very highly, like it's just starts getting like pounded and run out by Michigan. I don't think that, I kind of think the same thing is going to happen to UC. Like once you end up down like 20 points, like you're in trouble. And the offense is going to get like one-dimensional. Like if UC is going to have a chance, they have to jump out early, like kind of like they did against Ohio State a few years ago. Like they just jumped out with some big plays early, like kind of kept it close. And, like eventually, like they ended up getting blown out, but they kept it close. Like they had a chance. It was close at halftime, I think, if I remember correctly. And so
it was. I think they were only down 14, something like that. I mean, it was. I mean, they were in striking distance.
And like that's the kind of performance you're going to have. Like Mike Boone's going to have a big game. And you know Michigan's going to try to take him away first and make Hayden Moore beat him. So it's up to the receivers to not just like have solid games. Like those guys have to have big games.
Yeah, and they need like Mike Boone needs to have like that Isaiah Pede run that he had against Tennessee all those years ago. I mean, I don't think he's going to have it like right off the bat like Pede did. Where I mean, and I don't know if they're going to go up 7-0 over Michigan like UC did against Ohio State on a Chris Moore, you know, touchdown. But I think Mike Boone's going to have one of those like breakout runs against Michigan that he really like lets the world know that yeah, I'm a good player. Yeah, I can run on a Michigan level of defense. But I think you're right. I think it's probably going to come in like garbage time. So if we're going to break it down quarter by quarter and we just jump to the third quarter, I would amend my mind to say it's like 39-3 at the end of the third quarter. Michigan gets another field goal in the fourth to make it 42-9, and then UC gets some garbage Mike Boone touchdown to make it 42-16.
I kind of see that happening, like when Michigan scores all their points in the first three quarters and like maybe tack on a touchdown or field goal late.
Yeah. So
it's just a really tough challenge for this team. It's a tough challenge for any team to go up against somebody like Michigan, but especially like a young team that really hasn't found their identity yet. And like going to play at one of the toughest places to play in the whole entire country.
Right, and that's a good point. I mean, it's a tough challenge for anybody. It was a tough challenge for Florida. Like, Florida scored 3 offensive points on Michigan. For all intents and purposes, they lost 30-33. It's a tough challenge for them. It's going to be even harder for UC. And coming out of this game, we're not going to really learn anything. Like, like they're five touchdown underdogs for a reason. Like they could lose by 50 and this team could still win seven games this year and it won't really tell us anything. That's kind of like this whole season is basically giving us an idea of what this staff can bring to this team. These two games, it's hard to learn anything about them because you're following up your easiest game of the season where the defense played pretty well. The offense showed us what we kind of knew about them ahead of time. And then this week, you go in as huge underdogs, probably going to get blown out, hopefully keep it close. You don't really know what you're going to know about them at the end of this game. They're going to be 1-1. They're probably not going to beat Michigan. If they do, great, and Fickell is all of a sudden God's gift to football at UC. But they're probably not going to win. We're probably not going to learn much about them. It's not like this game is going to be a microcosm of the season. They're not going to get blown out every single game this year. They're probably going to play hard. They're probably going to play fast. They're probably going to play with passion. And they'll probably win six or seven games this year, hopefully. And if they do, we're not even going to really worry about this game. We're going to write this game off. I just wish they were playing Michigan in 2018 or 2019. And not game two of the Fickell regime. Yeah. But it is what it is.
It's like really like your biggest takeaway is just how consistent they play the whole entire time. And if anybody really gets hurt. It's like if they beat Michigan, like that'd be awesome, obviously. But it's like that's such a tall task. Like you just have to look at the little things and like hope like what you're doing is snowballing into something better. And like your performance against Michigan is better than your performance against Austin Peay. And that your performance against Miami next week is better than the performance against Michigan.
Right. What you hope for is that you start to identify nuggets on this team that they can build off of throughout the year. Perry Young is an example of that. He's probably going to be a solid player here. Mike Boone is hopefully going to be a point of consistency throughout the season where they can lean on him for 100 yards every single game. The offensive line is going to be a hot mess all year, but maybe you find a couple of guys on that team that are going to be mainstays for the next couple of seasons while Fickell adds depth and talent there. It's just those little things that we want to look for in this game that we can point to at the end of the season and say, hey, yeah, he was good against Michigan and he's still good against UConn and ECU. And oh, hell, he just had a pick six. Not a big surprise there. He's going to be a star in red and black. That's kind of what you're looking for in this game. You're not looking for the win. If fans are looking for the win, they really need to evaluate their life.
Yeah. You hope for the win and expect everything else to like, hope to play out well.
Right.
Let's move on before we close to look at the league as a whole. Right now, South Florida's 2-0. UC and UConn and UCF all 1-0 in the East. East Carolina and Temple both took different blowout losses. East Carolina is much more disappointing, I would say. Over in the West, Memphis, Navy, SMU, Tulane all had varying degrees of blowouts. I know the Memphis score ended up being close, but they won pretty handily. Houston didn't play because of the hurricane. And Tulsa played a top 10 team on the road and got run out of the building, which I kind of think a precursor of things to come.
Right.
So did anything stand out for you in week one?
Yeah, I think South Florida, I mean, they're supposed to be the crown jewel of the conference this year. Week one, which I guess is like week half, I guess. I mean, against San Jose State. I don't know how the hell they pulled it off starting on August 26th, but whatever. They look good against them. I mean, Quinton Flowers looked solid. It was a typical Charlie Strong stout defense. But then they struggled against Stony Brook at home last Saturday. That was my biggest surprise. Well, not one of my biggest surprises, but I expected them to play like they did against San Jose State on the road 2 Saturdays ago. I was very surprised to see them struggle against Stony Brook. I mean, they were tied in the fourth quarter. I mean, I would have expected them to absolutely blow Stony Brook out of the water. Temple looked really bad against Notre Dame. Notre Dame is, who knows what Notre Dame is this year. You never really know with Brian Kelly. They weren't very good last year. Who knows if he turned that around. I thought Temple would have played a little better than the 49-16 loss that they showed. And then, I don't know, East Carolina and UConn. I mean, they, on the flip side, wasn't surprised. I mean, East Carolina got blown out by JMU. That's a very good FCS school. And UConn needed a touchdown late to beat Holy Cross. Yeah. Go ahead.
East Carolina gave up 265 yards rushing to a player on James Madison. So that just sets the bar for gigantic performances against their defense this season. But to go back on South Florida, like even against San Jose State, they fell down like double digits early. And before like they ended up putting together like a solid performance.
True.
The question like what's wrong with them is definitely real. It's like being tied with Stony Brook in the fourth quarter is like a nightmare situation for like anybody. Especially them when they're supposed to be like a top 25 team. Like I know they're still ranked. But man, like their offense has just been kind of like average. And their defense hasn't been that great. So they'll probably improve and like they should. They play UConn this week, so they'll beat UConn. But I think that's a big worry, especially for the league in general, when like they're your best chance to have like a showcase standout team for the Access Bowl. But nothing else. Go ahead.
Yeah, just building off of that point, that's actually a really really good point. I mean, their struggles this year, and I don't know if that's something you chalk up to a new coaching staff. But I mean, you're right. I mean, they at the end of the day, they did turn around and blow out San Jose State to an extent. But I mean, they struggled last week at home. The team that apparently we should be looking out for is Central Florida in year two under Scott Frost. 61-17 over Florida International. I mean, FIU is not very good. But I mean, they obviously have an offense that's clicking. There's no rust from the off season for them. They've got Memphis this Friday. Who knows? I mean, if they blow out Memphis, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that they could fight South Florida for the East title and then eventually the AAC title. I mean, if South Florida is going to struggle like they've done in the last 2 weeks, and Central Florida just shows that they're rolling, I mean, the winner of that of the game at the end of the season, the battle for I-4 or whatever, the war of I-4, whatever they call it, I mean, that's probably going to be your East and your AAC champion. I mean, Navy not aside.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like Central Florida, I think the biggest takeaway from Week One was how good like their offense looked. Like, they put up over 500 yards. Like, last year, their defense was, like, incredibly stout. And, like, that was the reason why they beat, like, every bad team they played. Which, I guess, included UC. And, like, now if their offense is actually going to be, like, that big of a standout, I think they have a definite chance at taking down USF and winning the division. Like, the game against Memphis is just huge for both teams. It's like Navy also looked pretty impressive in their season opener against Lane Kiffin's team. It's like whoever loses that game, like Memphis is favored to win the West. It's like if they take a loss at UCF, like right off the bat, like they puts them in a pretty big hole. So that's a pretty key game to start the season. Your Friday night ESPNU coverage of a gigantic AAC game.
Right, and that's huge. That's almost like, you know, the games, I don't say back in the day, but like back when UC was fighting for AAC titles, like, you know, win or lose that game, that sets you up for the rest of the season. You're either behind the eight ball or you have a leg up on the rest of everybody else in the conference by beating a division and conference title contender in week two or three or whatever week you're in. Yeah, I mean, it seems like, as far as the East is concerned, I mean, South Florida was definitely the favorite to win, but I mean, it seems like UCF is up there now, and then it's just like a giant drop-off to the rest of the division, like Cincinnati, UConn, East Carolina, or Temple. I mean, we could all be considered as the third best team in the conference, or in the division, and at the same time, the sixth best. Like, Temple doesn't look that good. East Carolina and UConn obviously look awful. UC, we definitely have all of our struggles. I mean, it seems like it's just basically South Florida, Central Florida, and then whatever 50 feet of crap or whatever Billy Beane said in Moneyball, and then there's all the rest of us fighting for third place. Like, I was expecting it to be more of a fight at the top. Like, I was expecting South Florida, Central Florida, and Temple to be fighting their way at the top, and Temple might turn it around, but I mean, they didn't look that against Notre Dame. And then the rest of us fighting for fourth place. But it seems like it's just South Florida and Central Florida, and then the rest of us, and that's it.
Yeah, definitely. That was the takeaway so far from week one. And I guess week one and a half, or whatever people called the first game. It's like, yeah, like Temple, like their quarterback looked pretty decent. And like that was about it. Like their defense just couldn't handle anything that Notre Dame threw at them. And they ended up getting behind huge and, like, just getting blown out. That game wasn't even as close as the score. And so,
right.
Like, but then, like, UConn, like, we know UConn's that great. Yeah, it's like, kind of, like you said, it's like kind of just a muddled mess where those teams are just going to beat each other. And one of the Florida teams is going to, like, if any of the Florida teams loses, like, a UC, UConn, East Carolina, or Temple, they're not going to win the division. It's, like, as simple as that. Like, those teams have to run the gauntlet. Which, like, who knows, like, how they'll be able to do it, because, like, this conference is weird.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like as it's playing out now from a conference standpoint, it's like Central and South Florida out of the East, and then Navy or Memphis out of the West. Like, out of the West, like, Tulsa, I mean, SMU maybe is a dark horse, but, I mean, I still... They're always guilty until proven innocent to me. The same thing with Tulane, and you know, Tulsa didn't look great. Houston hasn't played, so we don't really know what's going to happen with them. But, I mean, as of now, as of September 7th, it looks like Memphis and Navy versus Central Florida and South Florida.
I think that's fair to say. It's like. SMU, yeah. Like, I watched some of the SMU game, like, just real quick on my computer, like, the replay. Like, their offense looked pretty good. Like, their one receiver is awesome. I can't remember his name. I'm blanking. But everybody knows who I'm talking about. Like, but they play,
sure, yeah.
They play, like,
we all watch SMU.
They play, like, Stephen F. Austin, and it's not basketball, so nobody cares about Stephen F. Austin.
Right.
Cortland Sutton, that's his name.
Okay, never heard of him, but yeah, go on.
First round draft projection, apparently.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
Don't sleep on AAC receivers.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, like Zay Jones was like a second rounder last year somehow.
Oh, that's true. I did see him. I was watching him on my draft earlier this week. I saw him like float up in like the wide receiver rankings as others were getting drafted. I was like, "Who the hell is that?" I recognize that name. It's like, oh, damn it! That's Zay Jones from East Carolina. Totally forgot about him. But yeah. Anyway, I don't know. The conference seems to be breaking as it's expected, with a few different twists, like. Like, Tulsa's not as good as we thought they were. Temple might not be as good as we thought they were. SMU and UCF look to be better than everyone thought they were. But, I mean, for the most part, it all looks like everything's kind of breaking so far the way most people expected.
Yeah. It is kind of hard to get a good read on Tulsa after, like, their first week. Just because, like, they had no chance against Oklahoma State. But their defense looks so terrible. It's really hard to buy in on them.
Right.
Let's give our predictions real quick before we leave. Sure. Friday night, Memphis at UCF. So UCF's a 3-point favorite. What's your lean on this game?
Yeah, I think Central Florida. I think if this game was at Memphis, I would probably pick Memphis, but because this game is at Central Florida and it got bumped up a day, which probably throws off Memphis' schedule more than Central Florida's because of the hurricane. UCF has a bigger advantage in this game. They're only 3-point favorites. If we look back at week one, all else being equal and not having that much of a sample size to go off of, Central Florida blew out their first opponent. Memphis only won by a touchdown. I got to say the edge goes to Central Florida.
I think so, too. I'm buying in on Central Florida, Scott Frost year two. I think they're going to beat Memphis. And I think they'll cover the spread, too. I think they'll win by a touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate, a touchdown or two.
Early morning Saturday game, South Florida at UConn. Game's at 10:30 in the morning, for whatever reason.
Yep.
South Florida's a 17.
It's because it's because of that damn hurricane again.
I don't think it matters what
Go ahead.
The game is played, because UConn doesn't really have a chance. Unless South Florida just is terrible again. Do you think South Florida's offense looks better in this game?
Yes, by way of UConn.
Do you think they cover a 17-point spread?
And that's the thing, is like I think UConn keeps it relatively close just because of, like, South Florida's gonna have an easier way of things just by playing UConn, but UConn does funky things up at the Rent. I mean, they just do. Like, UC's had always had weird games up there. I think they keep it within a couple of touchdowns. I don't think USF wins by 17 or more.
I'm gonna go the other way. Say this is the game USF looks like they're supposed to look, and they just blow UConn out. UConn gave up 447 yards in their first game, which is a lot.
Right.
East Carolina goes to Morgantown. They're gigantic underdogs. Do you think they're 24-point underdogs to West Virginia? Do you think they to end up getting blown out again?
Yeah, this is the game where the team with the points are going to cover. I don't see a scenario where West Virginia doesn't win by 30 or 40. East Carolina is just awful. I mean, they got blown out at home by an FCS school. I mean, like we talked about, James Madison is a good FCS school, but you're talking about going on the road against a West Virginia team that lost by 7 to Virginia Tech, and they were ranked last week. There's just no doubt in my mind what Dana Holgorsen chugs a couple of Red Bulls and just turns on the point machine.
East Carolina gave up 614 yards against James Madison. Do they give up over or under 615 yards against West Virginia?
Now, see, that all depends on the Red Bull factor. So, like, if Dana Holgorsen has, like, under 3 Red Bulls, he'll call off the dogs in the fourth quarter. If he has, like, over 3, then he's going to be just throwing out points. And that's my hot take.
West Virginia had 592 yards of offense in their opener. Also gave up 469 yards, which is not good either. Interesting game. The battle of the options. Tulane goes to Navy. Navy 13-point favorite. What's your lean on this one?
Yeah, I would. I always go. I have a hard time betting against Kenny Mottolillo. I mean, Navy is just Navy. 13-point sounds right. And I don't know. It's Tulane. They're, like I said, they're guilty until proven innocent. I think Navy wins by a couple of touchdowns. That line looks pretty okay.
And Navy gave up 40 yards rushing in their first game. And if they give up like 140 yards rushing, they'll blow Tulane out. Like, Tulane did run for almost 300 yards. But, like, they're not playing Grambling again. Navy ran for 416 yards in their opener. That's kind of crazy. SMU, 13-point favorite over the North Texas Mean Green. It's the SMU show roll on for week two.
Sure, why not? I don't know anything about North Texas. They beat Lamar 59-14 last week, but I mean SMU basically did the same thing last week against Stephen F. Austin. So yeah, sure. They win by a couple of touchdowns.
North Texas put up 668 yards, 436 on the ground. That's a lot of yards.
That is a lot of yards. This will not be a game, like, the over-under is 64.5. Oh, God, you take the over. bet the mortgage on the over.
Yeah, I think that's like a hot gambling tip of the week. Over-under on the SMU game.
Like, how is South Florida UConn, the over-under is 66, and the over-under in this North Texas SMU game is 64.5? Like, how is the over-under in this game less than South Florida and UConn?
I don't know. That seems kind of...
Like, how does that make any sense?
I really don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I guess we found a glitch in the system, so everybody... We're going to make our bets right before I post this, so everybody else can like add on and can make a ton of money this week.
Right, there's your gambling hot take, folks, from at least one person who doesn't gamble.
Temple plays Villanova. I don't think there's a spread for that one. Nobody cares about it. If Temple loses to Villanova, how worried would you be about Temple on the scale of 1 to 10?
With 10 being really worried?
Yeah.
Well, like, if I'm a UC fan and Temple loses, that would be a scale of 1 because that would mean it would be good for UC. So I'd be happy that if Temple lost because that's one more team that UC can jump in the East. I mean, from an overall, if I'm a Temple fan or just a fan of football or the AAC in general, yeah, Temple, you're going to be worried if you lose to Villanova. And Villanova only beat Lehigh by 3 points last week. Lehigh's not a good team. Temple should beat Villanova fairly handily, and I would be very concerned if I'm a Temple fan if they lost.
I think that's the correct way to look at it. Final game of the week, Houston's season opener against Arizona. Arizona, I guess, didn't look great in their win last week. Houston, actually, a favorite on the line I'm looking at on ESPN. A one-point favorite. How do you think it's going to go for Major Applewhite? Like, when we haven't talked a ton about Houston since UC doesn't play them this year. But, what do you expect from them? Do you think they're going to be, like, near the top of the league, or do you think they're going to be just, like, kind of, like, floating in the middle?
Well, it's so hard to tell, right? Because they haven't played a game because of the hurricane. And this is what's really odd, is that they're one-point favorites. They play on the road at Arizona. Arizona, I mean, they beat a Northern Arizona team that's not very good, 62-24, but they still beat them. Like, there's more tape and more information data on Arizona right now, and yet Houston is still a one-point favorite? I don't get that. Houston can, I don't know. They might be able to go down into Arizona and win. I mean, Major Applewhite seemed to be a talented coordinator. I mean, he's a head coach now. He's basically got his same team that Tom Herman left him, but I don't know. I don't know. I think Arizona wins that game by at least 10 points.
Yeah, it just seems like there's so many questions around Houston. It's like we don't really know. I mean, I guess Houston fans know who their quarterback's going to be. But, like, with like Greg Ward leaving such, like, a big hole, and obviously Tom Herman leaving, like, a gigantic hole himself. Plus, like, they weren't, like, amazing last year either.
Right.
I'm kind of leaning Arizona on this one, too. Houston plays.
And I guess, like, to your broader question, like, if even if Houston lost by a touchdown or two, I don't know what that says about Houston. Like, I think they're one of the most talented teams in the conference, if not the most talented one. But it's the coaching turnover even though it is basic, I mean, you're basically just promoting a coordinator to head coach, you're still bringing in new coaches. Like, it's still considered a team with a new staff. And I don't know how all that meshes.
I think it's like they lost, like, what, like their defensive coordinator went to Texas. They lost, like, a ton of other,
right,
like, assistants as well. It's just like how, like the whole offensive staff, like, left that one off season for UC. It's like almost the same thing at Houston.
Right. Right. So it's, yeah, I don't know. If Houston wins, then they're Houston again, and I would probably pick them as a favorite to win the West. If they lose, I don't know if they're not a favorite to win the West. There's not enough data on the Major Applewhite regime yet.
And at least they play an interesting enough opponent, so we'll be able to tell something from that game. At the very least.
Yeah, I mean, that's my point, though. It's like yes or no. Like, I don't know. If they beat Arizona, they're probably a favorite to win the West. If they lose to Arizona, I don't know that they're not. Because Arizona, I mean, the data on them is they can score a ton of points, albeit against an FCS school at home. But I don't know. I don't know if Houston, if they lose by a touchdown or two, if they're necessarily that much of a worse team last year where they can't jump Navy and SMU and Memphis in the West and take that crown. So I don't know. It's tough to say, and I hate that's a cop-out, but I'm going to go ahead and play the cop-out card.
Before we wrap up the podcast, do you have anything else you want to say?
Nope. Hopefully UC wins on Saturday, but they are probably not going to win on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, go Bearcats, beat Michigan, pull off the upset. So we have something good to talk about next time.